Okay, people, I'll grab your attention if I can. And we'll get into this together. If you are kind of new around here, my name's Tim. Nice to have you here, particularly if you are here because you're interested in this series that we're doing over the next 4 weeks. Great to have you here. Also good to have you here if you just didn't have air conditioning at home, thought you'd come along. Doesn't matter why, it's good to have you. And as Jamie said, the question we're dealing with is, how would you fix the world? And the top four answers have come in. Have you got that, is there that other slide with the four answers on it? Sorry, Sean. I'm going to mess you up now, mate, if you can find that one. There it is. He's good, isn't he? Let's hear it for Sean. You can't see him, but he's up there. Go on you, Sean. One thing's certainly the case. As we asked people around the Central Coast this question, no one had any trouble understanding the question. Yeah? Because apparently it's pretty easy to notice that our world has some pretty serious problems. And just what's unfolded over the last few days in France. Like, it's not hard to see there's some serious issues going on. But as you can see, we've got some pretty different answers that come in. Now, as you get different answers, those different answers suggest that there's a different problem that needs to be fixed with the world. So some people would say the problem is religions. And we're going to deal with that in week three. Some would say the problem is with all the authorities. And that's week two. What we're going to look at tonight, the people who actually did say, and I think pretty honestly, no, the problem's people. Just people in general. Now, it is important to get the correct diagnosis, isn't it? You want to really figure out what the problem is, otherwise you'll come up with a solution that actually won't work. I visited a mate this week whose father has just recently found a melanoma on his hand, huge one. But the fella had it there for quite a while and didn't think much of it. I'm glad it's been diagnosed, because if he'd gone on thinking it was just a scab or a wound, then he would have gone on with the kind of treatment that wouldn't have done any good, which was plenty of sunlight, plenty of fresh air. All right, you want to know what's going on. You want the correct diagnosis. Now that he knows it's melanoma, he's going with a pretty full-on, intensive, aggressive approach, as you do. You get right into it and you cut it out. So what is wrong with our world? At the heart of it all, what's the big problem? The answer that we're dealing with tonight is the one that quite a few people gave, a really honest answer. The problem is with people. So you can go to the one that just says fix people now, Sean, if you want. Has that got the number on it as well? It's got the number down there. Yeah, and so the concept here is I'll try and wrap up earlier than I normally do. I'll try, okay, and leave some time for questions. And if anyone's texted through a serious question or a funny question, then we'll have a go at it and see what we can do. But seriously, there's no such thing as a dumb question. Just fire it through and we'll filter out all the crazy ones, okay? Or not. As people answered, how do you fix the world? Fix people. Let me bring some clarifying on that. What most people meant, we believe, as they said fix people, was fix some people. Yeah? Fix the certain kind of people that have managed to go bad, thinking that there's a small percentage of people in this world that have been so messed up and are so badly broken and corrupted that they are the ones who actually cause the majority of issues that we have around the place. And if we can fix them, if we can find out what's happened for them and fix them, then we're going to make the world a far better place. And so we look at what's happening in France at the moment. We say the majority of people in France are lovely, but these few characters that are causing, you know, just horrendous horror at the moment, what's going on for them? We need to figure out what that is. We need to fix that in them, and then the world will be a safer place. This kind of thinking does have behind it, I want to suggest this, and just see if you can feel this with me. Most people, you and I, will be able to admit that we all, in a sense, contribute to a bit of the problems in the world. You know, none of us are perfect. We all contribute to a little bit of the problem, but all the real problems lie with a few bad eggs. Yeah? Most of us are generally good at heart. We occasionally make mistakes, but most of us are okay. And so with the seed situation in Sydney and that hashtag that came out, I'll ride with you, which I thought was just a wonderful expression of, you know, friendship and solidarity, the media really jumped on that and made a big thing of it to say, look, really, most of us are really wonderful people. We're very generous, we're very tolerant. We love, particularly in our society, to put out there the fact that actually most of us are really good. There's just a couple that have gone bad and have been seriously corrupted. The mother who murders 8 children in a house in Cairns, you know? the fellow who takes hostages in Sydney, what's happened in France. So what has happened to these few people? Let's roll with that assumption. There's a belief and an assumption behind the concept that there's a few people who have gone bad, and I want to suggest the belief goes like this. All people are born good and innocent, but then they get corrupted by the world that we live in. It's a pretty common belief in the world, in our society, which I would suggest is predominantly secular humanist society. You know, most people think we're born good, we get corrupted by our environment or our circumstance or our experience. You know, you get an innocent little baby born into a family that's really dysfunctional, and the kid gets messed up. You know, or as a kid's growing up, it gets mixed up with the wrong crowd, bad influence. Or we get corrupted by the media and what it says to us. Or we get corrupted as we end up finding ourselves abusing, involved in substance abuse, and that just wrecks us. Or just generally, it's society and culture that corrupts a person. A lot of people believe this, and maybe that's you. We start good at heart, but then we get ruined by external factors. Things that are around us, outside of us, that actually come in and corrupt us. Now, that's a pretty common belief, but just before we dive into that and kind of wrestle with it, I just need to give my own kind of personal reaction to that belief and that assumption, and kind of roll with me here if we can for a moment. Born good, we're all born good and innocent. I can't help but to think, really? Like, if you've had kids, it's pretty hard, I reckon, to hold to that. Maybe if you haven't had kids, you can hold that. But if you've had kids, can you really honestly think we're born good? Now, some of you are just starting into this season of life, and you're shocked right now, yeah? Some of you have got these brand new little babies, and you were just thinking all your dreams are going to come true. But I've seen you walking through that door. You look like the walking dead right now, because this precious little baby has just gone bad on you, and it's crying nonstop. You know, I can see it in the look in people's faces. You know, you're thinking, is she ever going to stop crying? You know, I've been up all night. Can you die from sleep? What do you call it? Sleep. You know, you're with me. Yep. Like, it's freaky. And we come up with all these reasons why babies don't sleep. And, you know, oh, they're gassy, or, you know, my baby's got reflux or colic. No one knows what colic is. We just make up words, right? Or lactose intolerant. No. Your baby's just evil and it's messing with you, right? It's trying to keep you up all night long and destroy you. And I know, because I've got four kids, right? I've been there. My kids have grown up a little bit now, but it's not too long ago that I remember going through this. And I swear we went through whole seasons where the kids just decided they were going to gang up on us and like tag team us right through the night and keep us up all night. Like, I don't know how they do that, you know? Do they sit down, have a little conference before they go to bed? Righto, I'll take from 12 through to 2. You take 2 to 4, you take 4 to 6, and that's the voice they would have used, right, when they're having their little conference. And then by the time the sunrise comes up, mum and dad are going to be so messed up, we'll get whatever we want for breakfast, coffee, pancakes, and the, you know, as a parent, you're just freaking out. Or maybe some of you guys have got the little crawling babies, or they're just starting to move around on the furniture a little bit. And you've watched your kid go towards that thing you don't want them to touch, the stereo or whatever it is. And on their way there, you've been like, oi, no, don't touch. And the kid stops and it looks up at you. And while it's looking at you, it reaches out and just grabs that thing, right? And we tell ourselves, oh, they don't really understand yet. And the kid's just there going, yeah, you keep telling yourself that, Dad. I'm just going to touch everything I can. Friends, born innocent? Well, I don't think so. I think you see evidence from a really early age that we're not innocent. There's actually something there already. However, let's live with the delusion just for a little bit and unpack it, right? Let's live just thinking, okay, let's say we are all born innocent and get corrupted by external factors. What do you do? What's the solution? You work on all the external factors, don't you? So that people don't get so corrupted and people don't get so broken. So you see the kid that's been broken by his family and you think, okay, what we need is better, you know, better family support for people. And some of these things are very helpful and they're part of the solution. Or you see kids growing up and you see ignorance, like a really deep level of ignorance about a whole range of things. And so we think, okay, better education. We need to inspire kids to that they can make a difference with their lives. Or you see people that are just really violent and you think, okay, what we need is better censorship laws because they've obviously been impacted by what they've watched. Or we see just general bad behaviour and we think, okay, what we need to do is instill ethics in this next generation and values and morals, because obviously people don't have that anymore. And this is usually where Christianity comes in, and people think, yeah, we just need to get a bit more Christian morals out there. And I see this in parents panicking as they watch their kids grow up and then think, despite their best efforts to raise kids that are generous and you know, other person-centered, they watch their kid grow up and all of a sudden there's this monster changing before them, and this kid is just selfish and even angry, and parents panic a little bit and think, I just got to get my kid to church, you know, because in church maybe they'll get some Christian values, they'll get some morals. Hopefully they don't go and get themselves all super religious or anything, just kind of a bit straightened up. And maybe that's you, that's why you're here tonight, yeah? Or you're worried about your kids. Just on this one, it is a pretty popular view that people think that Jesus came primarily to set us a good example, yeah? That he would come and live this wonderful life and we'd all go, ah, that's how we're meant to do it. Because what we really need is just someone to show us the way and lead the way, and then we'll be right. That's a pretty popular view of Jesus, the great moral example for the world. Now, he certainly did live an impeccable life, but is that all he was, just a moral example? If it were true, if that's what Jesus came to do, just set a good example, then you would expect Jesus to simply be saying constantly, look, just watch me, follow what I do, and do that, and you'll be fine. But Jesus actually never says that. He actually says other things, and you might be very surprised to hear what Jesus actually says about why he came. You don't ever hear him say, look, just copy me and live like me and you'll be fine. It's obvious from Jesus' perspective that the solution is not just to get a good example in your life, get a good model in your life, and address the externals that are impacting you effectively. Jesus' diagnosis of the problem is far deeper than you may have ever expected. It may be far more serious than you've ever thought about before. And so I want you to come with me to the passage that we just had read earlier from Mark chapter 7. And if you don't have a Bible, that doesn't matter. We're going to have it up on the screen. Is that all right, Sean? Can we go to Matthew chapter 7? And I want you to follow through here. Here's just a little incident where Jesus speaks and interacts with people. And we actually get to see really clearly, I think, Jesus diagnosing the problem with the world and talking about why he'd come. Now, the context here is this. This is about 2,000 years ago when this incident happens and Jesus is speaking here. Now, why would we be going back 2,000 years into an ancient culture? Well, it's so relevant for us because you can see that people have got the very same thinking about life and what the problem is 2,000 years ago as we tend to have today. This is super helpful for us. You've got people in this situation here in Mark chapter 7 acknowledging their own brokenness and acknowledging that there's a problem with people, but trying to fix it by just working on all the externals of life that are corrupting the person. In other words, everyone thinks the problem's out there wrecking me. And here's what Jesus wants to actually dig into and speak about. The context here really is a religious context. So you've got a whole bunch of people trying to actually fix themselves and stay good themselves by things like ceremonial washing of hands and ceremonial washing of utensils, so that when you do eat, the food that goes into you is not bad and then ends up corrupting you. Can you see what they think the problem is? It's bad things that you eat or do that come in and corrupt you. They're trying to avoid anything bad entering them, any externals coming into their internal and corrupting them. Can you see their thinking? Like, ceremonial washing of hands might be a weird cultural thing for us to even consider these days, but beneath it is the very same thinking that we see here on the Central Coast and all around the world, the same idea. And that is this: no, I'm essentially good. The problem is outside of me, and I've got to stop that entering me and corrupting me. So the solution is to work on all those things around me, the influences in my life. And Jesus effectively says, no, you've got it completely backwards. You got it the wrong way around. The problem is not with your externals. The problem is with your internals. And so the solution is not working on the outside in. The solution is working from the inside out. And he says, it's not just with some people. This is actually a problem for everyone. So let's have a look at it. Verses 14 and 15 there, well, those first few lines on the screen. Again, Jesus called the crowd to him and said, listen to me, every one of you, and understand this. So when Jesus says something like that, he's really keen for everyone to really get this. This is really important. Don't miss this. Nothing outside a person can defile them, like corrupt them, make them bad, by going into them. Rather, it is what comes out of a person that defiles them. Can you see what Jesus is saying? He says, you don't get corrupted from things outside of you coming in and messing you up. It's the other way around. Corruption actually originates within you and comes out of you, which is just different from how we would think. Verse 17, which is the next verse, or just under that. After he had left the crowd and entered the house, his disciples asked him about this parable. So even his own best mates and followers weren't getting this. And he retreats with them to have a little conversation with them. And he uses just really comforting language. Look what he says. Are you so dull? You know, Jesus obviously had a good enough relationship with his mates to say, are you that stupid that you don't get this? So Jesus really wants us to get this, yeah? Are you so dull? Don't you see that nothing that enters a person from the outside can defile them? Next slide, Sean. For it doesn't go into their heart, but into their stomach. So here's the big thing we want to tune in on here, focus in on. Jesus says things outside you don't corrupt you because things outside of you, and particularly in this situation, food, don't actually get to your heart. Food just gets to your stomach and then it goes back out. Just a nice little illustration there for us. But food and other things that you might be involved in actually don't get to your heart. And Jesus says, actually, that's the big thing here. It's about the condition of your heart that is corrupted. And that's what needs to be dealt with and thought into. Now, just a little one here, guys. Whenever the Bible talks about the heart, and if you're not used to the Bible, it's not talking about the physical muscle in your chest that pumps blood around your body. When the Bible talks about the heart, it's talking effectively about the spiritual heart of a person. It's talking about the core of your being, the very center of your personhood. When the Bible talks about your heart, it's talking about the you. You got me? The real core bit of you from which all of your will and your desires and your emotions and your longings and your beliefs come from. Effectively, we all live from our hearts. It's from your heart that you live. And Jesus actually has got some pretty serious words for us about our hearts. He's basically saying, that's actually where the problem is. And it's not outside things that get in and ruin your heart. Your heart is corrupted already. Have a look at verse 20, just the next one there. He went on, what comes out of a person is what defiles them. For it is from within, out of a person's heart, that these things come. We'll get to those things in just a minute. Can you see what he's saying? The problem is what's in here. The problem is what's in you internally. Its condition, being corrupted, means you are broken and doing evil. The problem is in here already. Jesus is very clear. You know, there's other passages in the Bible that talk about the heart in a very devastating way. Jeremiah chapter 17 says this, the heart is deceitful above all things and it is beyond cure. Who can understand it? That's just not a nice thing at all to hear about the very center of your being, is it? It's beyond cure. You know, Jesus says here in this verse, he says, it's actually from your heart that all these things come. Look, that evil thoughts come from your heart, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance and folly. All these evils come from inside and defile a person. How are you going with that? That's a pretty full-on thing to hear, isn't it? That's hard to swallow, to think that evil, the evil things that you do, the evil things that you potentially could do, all that actually come from within you. It would be far easier for me to swallow and digest if I could think that no, I do these things sometimes because of what's happened to me entirely. You know, it's far easier for us to think, oh no, I have evil thoughts because I'm surrounded by evil people and they've just, I don't know, messed me up. Or you see in yourself a sexual immorality, or in others a sexual immorality. And you think, yeah, they're like that because we live in a society that's like sexually broken. And people have had exposure to pornography and all these kind of things. That's why they're sexually immoral. And Jesus says, no, no, no. I'll tell you where sexual immorality comes from. Even if you'd never been exposed to pornography, and even if you'd never had people mess with you, your heart is corrupted enough for all kinds of sexual immorality to just come out of it. That's pretty hard to hear. Murder. Jesus talks about hatred. You know, it's far easier for me to think, no, I sometimes hate people, or I sometimes notice racism, you know, or classism. Or it's because of the way I've been bred. It's because of what's been bred into me. No. Even if you didn't have any of that influence as you're growing up, your heart has the capacity to hate all on its own and be racist all on its own and be classist all on its own. It's that corrupted. It's hard to hear, isn't it? Slander. You know, sometimes things will come out of your mouth that shock you. Yeah? You're like, did that really come out of my mouth? I honestly didn't think I could say those things about someone else. Slander is when you have a go at someone else. Often foul language there too. Or you might just be thinking it in your head and it hasn't come out your mouth. But it shocks you. And again, it's easier to think, oh, look, I think that way and I blow off steam at other people because of the way I've heard my parents talk about other people. Or the way I've heard my friends talk about. Even if you had never had any of that, your own heart would come up with brand new swear words that you'd never heard. And an ability to actually slander others. You know? It's far easier to think that the evil I see in myself and in others has happened because of external things that have corrupted the person. But Jesus says, no, the problem's actually in me. The problem originates in my heart. The problem is at the very core of your being is corrupted. So what's the solution then? That's what we're going to be looking at over these whole 4 weeks, by the way. I'm not going to wrap it all up tonight. But what's the solution? What can a person do about their heart, the very core of their being? Well, I guess you could try to coach it. You could try to train it. You can try to contain it and minimize the harm that comes from it. But friends, you'll never heal it. You'll never completely fix your heart. What you need is a new one. And we've got a God who offers just that to us, a new heart. We're given a promise in the Bible in Ezekiel chapter 36, which is about 1,000 years before Jesus ever arrived, a promise about how God was going to offer us new hearts. Have you got Ezekiel 36 there, Sean? You don't. Missed the memo? Oh, I might not have put it through. I'm going to read to you Ezekiel 36. I'm sorry, that was meant to be up on the screen. And if you've got a Bible, you can turn to Ezekiel 36. It's kind of hard to find Ezekiel 36. Here it is. Let me read this to you. Verse 26. Look what God says. Here's the promise. I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. There's a promise from God saying, I know your problem and I'm going to offer you a new heart. Now that sounds strange. How do you get a whole new center of your personhood? Well, Jesus says, God says, I'm going to come and actually put my spirit in you. And as my spirit comes in you, your old, cold, hard heart is going to be removed. And you're effectively getting a new heart put in you. It's a spiritual heart transplant. And as you get my spirit, a brand new heart in you, God says, I'm going to move you. In other words, I'm going to influence you and change you from the inside out, which is the very thing that you need. It's the very thing that I need. And this promise that God gives about the new hearts is ultimately fulfilled in Jesus, the coming of Jesus, who comes and he lives a life on our behalf, he dies a death in our place, he rises again from the dead, and he turns to humanity and says, want a new heart? It's the very thing you need. Put your trust in what I've done for you. Believe in what I've done for you. Have faith in what I've done for you. And you get a new heart, which means I will come and live in you by my spirit and I will move you and influence you from the inside out. You will find yourself with new desires that you never had and I will change you from the inside. I will fix you. And through fixing you and others, that's how I'm restoring things in this place. Friends, we have a God who loves humanity and grieves over its brokenness more than you or I will ever do. And he has so determined to fix it by fixing us. And so he sends Jesus, a saviour, who comes effectively as a spiritual cardiologist who's going to give us the heart transplant that we really need. Because our major issue was with our hearts. You see, if our major issue was something else, if really people could be fixed by fixing the externals around us, if the major issue was something else, then God would have sent something else, yeah? If the major issue with people was just ignorance, God would have sent an educator. If the major issue with humanity was just a lack of inspiration and a lack of motivation and a lack of vision, then God would have just sent a life coach. And Jesus gets branded as all these things, by the way, sometimes. But he's not that. If the major issue with humanity was just poor health and disease, God would have sent a doctor. If the major issue with humanity was finances, then God would have sent an economist. Thank the Lord he didn't, yeah? That would have been a boring thing. If the major problem with humanity was just general bad behaviour, then God would have just sent the great moral example as a disciplinarian to get us all into shape with our behaviour. But friends, the major issue is far deeper than all of those things. It's actually a broken heart, a corrupted heart. And so God sends a saviour who can give you the heart transplant you desperately need. Let me finish with a little saying that I've tweaked a little bit. If we could fix ourselves and fix the world through just addressing external factors that influence us, then it would be like saying this. Or let me try and sum up by saying this. Social reform and personal improvement might put a new suit on the man, but Jesus came to put a new man in the suit. A whole new heart. There you go. I'm going to pause now, and we've got plenty of time for questions. So I'm hoping someone's texted something, and if you haven't, text it now, and it might come through in time. And yeah, so Jamie, you're the one, they've been coming through to you, have they?
I just got about four then.
You got a couple?
Yeah.
Good.
The first one I got this one in the first 2 minutes.
Okay. They weren't listening to anything I said yet, were
they? Is Tim going for a young Gandalf look?
A young Gandalf. Did you catch that question? It's just rude, isn't it? Questions about my appearance.
Look, serious question that I got through. The legal system doesn't work to change behaviours. What is the best way to change sinful behaviour? And should we even bother, as it's a broken world anyhow?
Can you say it again?
So, the legal system doesn't work to change behaviours. What's the best way to change sinful behaviour? And should we even bother? Because it's a broken world.
Yeah, good. I think there's almost a couple of questions in that one. One of them we're going to deal with next week when we look at authorities. And really, as we look at authorities, we look at the legal system and whether is that the answer to all things. So I'll save a few things for that. I'm still trying to get... What's the next bit of the question?
You're all right.
Answered the first bit already.
What's the best way to change sinful behaviour?
What's the best way to change sinful behaviour? Yeah, good. I think the first thing you want to notice is that when people do become Christians and God gives them a new heart, not everyone just changes straight away. In fact, everyone does still do dumb things and evil things. So what's the best way to change evil behaviour? Well, the Bible would actually bring to us that the way it begins is with a new heart, and then God intends to bring change to you gradually over time. Some people, when they first come to put their trust in Jesus, will actually experience radical transformation. In fact, I met a guy the other day who's been transformed. He's for about 35 years, and I know him well. He used to be a drunk, wife-beating, gambling, you name it. He was everything. And came to put his trust in Jesus and found himself miraculously healed from a whole bunch of addictions and behaviours which were so destructive in his life. And he said to me, it was just last week, he said, "Look at me, mate, 35 years on." And I said, "How are you doing? Do you still struggle? Do you still get tempted with alcoholism and a whole bunch of other things?" He says, "No, no, no. Honestly, I got healed right then and there." And he hasn't felt those temptations since. He's been living a really different life. He actually does lead AA meetings and a whole bunch of things as well. But so some people, it is the case that some people experience radical transformation in their behavior when they come to Christ. But for most, and I think you see this through the Bible, for most, God's intention is to change us slowly but substantially over time in very real ways on our way to heaven, knowing that when we actually do arrive there in glory, that is where all sin and all evil behavior will finally be stripped away. But God's in the process of taking us there. So how, I mean, let God do that work in you. But it begins with a brand new heart.
Yeah. Cool. Another kind of curly one for you.
Yep.
If God made us and we're broken, then it's his fault, isn't it? If a bridge falls down, it's not the bridge's fault. It's the guy who made its fault.
Yeah, good. Good. Did you catch that one? Yeah, yeah. If we're so broken and the brokenness originates from within us, then God made us, didn't he? So why did he make us like this? It's a great question. So I'll take you back to the beginning, which is where we need to go. Right, the first few pages of the Bible tell us how God first made us. And he didn't first make us broken. He actually first made humanity wonderfully whole and unbroken and perfect. And you get the beautiful images in the first few chapters of the Bible of a man and a woman living together in the Garden of Eden. They're naked. It's just awesome, right? Everything's going well. That's all I can think about. But anyway, yeah, they're there. And God declares it is very good. It is very good. But very soon, the first representatives of humanity, our great, 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 great grandparents, decide to rebel against their creator, reject him, and that's the moment where humanity falls. You get in chapter 3 of the Bible, and that's the way humanity just spins out of control. And you see, even in the first generation, their kids, one of them kills the other one. So evil just springs to life as humanity rejects its maker and the governance of its maker. So God made us beautiful. We rejected him, and so we now live with the consequence of that rejection, which is sin. That's what the Bible calls it. And it means there's a whole range of evil and wickedness that we experience in life and we'll even be involved in sometimes ourselves, which will horrify us and mean the experience of life will be very hard for most. Bob Carr once said, Bob Carr, why am I quoting Bob Carr? He once said, I'm going to quote him, I'll probably get it wrong. For most people, their experience of life is inherently disappointing. And it's because we're broken. But that's not what God intended for us. That's not the way he made us, but it is the reality that he comes to change. Yeah.
Okay, this one just came through as I was walking up. What about people who have had an abusive upbringing? Can you honestly say that that hasn't affected how they carry themselves as an adult? Are you saying upbringing doesn't affect someone's It's all to do with their heart.
Great, great question. Really good point to clarify. I want to say all external factors do impact us. Yeah? And certain people will be, you know, largely or different levels of impact because of their experiences in life. Please don't hear me discounting that. Absolutely. There's all kinds of abuse and all kinds of things that many of us will experience, and they will impact us, and they will impact the way we live our lives. Absolutely. The point Jesus is trying to make really well is, even if nothing around you had been bad, you have a heart that is bad. And evil will come out of you, even if those things didn't even exist because of the corrupted state of your core, because sin's been passed on through every successive generation. So, yeah, that's a really good, helpful point to clarify. I hope I've done that. Yeah,
cool. Do you want to we've got some time. You want to do two more?
Yeah, keep going.
I just got another one then.
Oh, no, do you want to do two more?
How's it going? Good? So this one just came through. What's so different between Christians and Buddhists? Can I meditate these things away? Don't Christians still sin?
What's the difference between Christians and Buddhists?
Yeah.
Christians and Buddhists? Okay, that's a pretty big question. Can I meditate these things away?
Can I meditate these things away? Don't Christians still sin?
Okay, there's some huge difference between Christians and Buddhists. Buddhism is a philosophy, effectively. It doesn't believe in a god. It believes in a really, if you talk about suffering, the Buddhists would actually say the way to escape suffering or deal with suffering is to remove desire. That's why you suffer. And if you don't have any desires for things to be good, then you won't experience suffering. So remove desire. Buddhism essentially actually does say that you don't really exist as a person. You're particles of matter, part of the general force of the universe, and this is the state in which you exist right now. But you will go on to exist in different states as different particles come together. So radical difference between that and Christianity, which says, no, there is a God who actually makes a person you, and you won't be another person, you'll just be you, and this is just one life you have, and this is the life to actually know the God who made you as he's come to you in Jesus. So they're pretty radical. Second part of it was, can I meditate bad things away?
Yeah, can I meditate these things away?
Yeah, it depends how you define meditation. You will see the Bible talking about meditation. But biblical meditation, Christian meditation, is very different from Buddhist meditation. Christian meditation is to fill your mind with the things of God through scripture and prayer. Buddhist meditation, if I understand it well, I shouldn't claim to be an expert on Buddhism, but Buddhist meditation is the very opposite of that. It's not to fill your mind with things. It's actually to empty your mind of things. And there'll be a whole bunch of effects that will come from emptying yourself and emptying your mind of things. But they're very different things, yeah.
Cool.
Was there a last part of that question?
Scrolling back down. Don't Christians still sin?
Don't Christians still sin? Absolutely.
Yeah, it's kind of
The worst.
Give you the last one because it's kind of similar. Yep. Why do Christians with new hearts still do evil things?
Yeah, great. Why do Christians with new hearts still do evil things? That's kind of similar to the first question. Sometimes things can change radically when you get a new heart. As I told you about my friend, why do Christians, while you've been given a new heart, God's Spirit's come to live in you, this side of heaven, you will still live with the reality of sin, the presence of sin in you and in those around you, which means you will do evil. But you are no longer under the power of sin and the penalty of sin. So sin's grip on you has completely changed. You live with the presence of it, so you'll still make mistakes. But God has now got you on a different trajectory, which is change, to become more and more like the way he designed you to be, more and more like his son. So someone who claims to be a Christian, but you look back over a 5 and 10 year period in their life and there has been no change, I think that's cause for saying, you really are a Christian? Because there ought to be change. Sometimes it's not as quick as we'd like to see. But if you can't look back over 5, 10, 15, 20 years and see change, I think if God's Spirit is living in you and he's given you a new heart, you can anticipate there will be change. But if there hasn't been change, it might be that you've been viewing Christianity like this. And here's a really common way to view Christianity. I'm going to come along, going to get involved in these church things because the community's great and I want to make myself a better person, so hanging around with these people, that's going to help as well. So you've come to view Christianity as just a way of self-improvement, how to fix yourself up. But it's never going to bring the change you long for, because at the heart of Christianity is not just fixing yourself, but it's coming to Jesus to get a brand new heart and being saved by him, having your sin forgiven, and then actually being on a completely different trajectory heading towards glory.
Cool.
So, yeah.
There's a couple more we didn't get to, but
that'll do.
We're going to come up.
That'll do. Good on you, mate. Well done, guys. And please keep doing this each week, and we'll see if... hope it's a helpful dynamic. How about I finish by praying, and then we're going to sing again, and then we'll hang out. So let me pray. Father God, we are so glad that you reveal yourself to us. You don't leave us in the dark. You come to us as Jesus. We have the scriptures here to know his words, his life. So we actually can see the way you diagnose the problem of this world. So good to hear that you grieve its brokenness more than we do even. And it's even better to hear that you've come with a solution, because you love this world and you want to fix its brokenness. Thank you for Jesus. Thank you that he holds out for each and every one of us a brand new heart. Lord, would you help us to see we need it? Would you help some here to start moving in the direction towards receiving your spirit, your heart, through trust in you. Lord, would you do that work in us for your glory? Amen.